It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 708. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail on Skype. The name is all one word, Mike Tech Show. And follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow, and also Facebook, facebook.com/miketechshow. This show is brought to you by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on-demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow for your free 15-day trial, or you can go directly to instanthousecall.com. Lots of great stuff. I was traveling last week, and I was working. I had work while I was in Florida, and then I also had some remote work. We solved a lot of problems last week, a lot of little ones that I am going to share. Spooler printer problems, a Kaspersky removal tool, QuickBooks. We got a couple email questions on QuickBooks, and going to talk about that fix for when you're cloning a drive that you got to remember, a OneDrive problem, email blocked from sending, we're going to talk about the new Microsoft Power Tools that I think you're going to be interested in. And we have a stack of email for me to get to. So let's begin. First, a client called me in a panic right before I was traveling last week, and they lost a document that they were working on for several hours. And this has happened before. And they said, I clicked file save every couple minutes. And yes, they did. It all depends on how the user obtained the file. I don't know if you recall, a long time ago, I helped an attorney on a Sunday who opened the file from a zip file and then clicked file save instead of file save as. So this person was pulling the document off the web. So that means it's going to be in a crazy location that the user has no idea that the temp file is being created in that location. And so they keep clicking file save. And then finally, when they close, they think when they open up Word that it's going to be there in the recent documents that were opened. And it is not. I told the user, do not panic. Let me remote in. Show me how you open the file. Once they did that and I opened it up, I pretended to save as. So you click file, save as, but you don't click anything else. It will display the path of the location. I now physically go to that location in File Explorer, find the file, copy it to their documents. We rename it, set it up, I close Word, open up that document in Word, and they are very grateful, and it only took a couple minutes. Wanted to share that because that's something that we find a lot. The user doesn't realize they got to click file save as. They just assume that whenever you open up a document, when you save it, it's going to automatically go to documents, and that's untrue depending on the source of how you open the file. So wanted to share that. That's a great saving tip for users. We are running into many, many printer problems. Now, some are caused by the Windows 10 update, but then some are just caused because the spooler gets jammed up. And I'm going to have a link because we did this several times last week where my son was remoting into a client or I was remoting in. And it's how to fix a printer spooler problem. Whenever someone has trouble printing, of course, rebooting the system, restarting the printer But if that doesn't work, this should be the first thing to go to. And you navigate to the administrative tools, open up services, go to the printer spooler, stop the service. Then you have to go to a very specific directory that I'm going to have located here. Any files that are in that directory, they are the temporary print files. Delete them because things could be jammed up. Then go back to the services and start the server. I'm telling you, 7 times out of 10, that fixes the problem. And we had many of them all of a sudden happening. Even here, it had to be lingering results from a Windows 10 update, because all of a sudden, one of the printers here in my office, my son and I couldn't print to. And I, after a reboot, we were able to print. Now, my son, Mike Jr., still has trouble printing to this one multifunction printer for HP, and I don't know why. I finally fixed mine, and I didn't change the driver. It was really just a reboot of my computer. But again, it was after updates. The link that's going to be in the show notes will have other suggestions and good things to try to fix a printer problem. Removal tool for Kaspersky, and I still have a lingering pop-up. My client removed Kaspersky, and we're using Malwarebytes Premium. But even with no traces of Kaspersky anywhere on the system, nothing in the toolbar, nothing in the startup, there's got to be something buried deep. And I even went to Revo Uninstaller, and it doesn't show anything for Kaspersky. What I'm going to have to do is look at the sysadmin tools for Process Explorer probably, and then see what is running. There's got to be something on the startup somewhere in the registry, because he's occasionally still getting a pop-up ad for Kaspersky. But in my searching, I did find from Kaspersky a removal tool that I think's handy to have this link around for when you want to get rid of it. Now, we're going to talk about QuickBooks for a second, but then we're going to come back to it later with some email. Client that I was working on their system in Tampa, Florida last week, one of the things we had to do was clone the drive. I had to do a clone. And they have QuickBooks. And you have to remember, actually this, and actually some a side effect of Shadow Protect. If you have QuickBooks running on a system and you clone it, there is a very particular license file that you have to delete or just rename it. What I recommend is going to that directory, delete the file, and this is after the first reboot of the clone drive. QuickBooks will yield an error. You have to delete this file. Once it's gone, program data. Now you have to go to the folder file options in Control Panel and view hidden folders, because program data by default is not viewable off the C drive. So once you get program data, then you go to Intuit, Entitlement Client, and then V8. And there is a file called entitlementdatastore.ecml. You can delete that, and then it's recreated the next time you launch QuickBooks. I normally rename that. I don't know. I'm paranoid just deleting a file. I always like .old. Rather than just delete the file, especially the first time when I was doing that. But this will absolutely solve your QuickBooks problem, and it's going to be the answer, I think, to one of the emails I'm going to be reading later. So wanted to share that because I had to do that last week, and that's a great tip. And again, a great link that I'm going to have for QuickBooks for that fix. Another problem is the OneDrive Personal Vault. It's a special folder in your OneDrive that's protected by an extra layer of security. Now, not everybody sets this up. Sometimes you get prompted to set it up. My users set it up. And You need to set it up separately on each device where you want to use it. And the first time you see Personal Vault in your OneDrive, you'll see a message where you can select Get Started. Now, we had an issue where there was a link in the folder that could not sync, and it kept prompting an error on his sync to OneDrive. Now, I deleted that file, that link. It recreated itself properly, and then the sync was working. But I explored that Personal Vault, and I'm going to have a link describing what that's all about and that extra layer where you have to do a double login, and it'll ask you it's a multi-factor authentication. So it's going to send a text to your cell phone where you're going to have to enter that code. So it's just an extra layer of security within OneDrive. And if you need that, anytime you access it, you're going to have to go through that process. Had another emergency call last week while I was traveling. And luckily, I had Saturday, I had some calls that I took care of. One was a Mac problem. I was able to remote in and fix it. The second was this problem. The user is an Office 365 email user, and they couldn't send messages. But everybody else in the office could. They could all send messages except this one person. And it was very frustrating. They changed their they got a message that they cannot send any email because the privileges have been suspended for sending. The wording was something like that. And what happened, Microsoft identified this person as a spammer. So she must have been infected or a problem with spam. We did a two-pronged attack. The first thing we did, I had my son remote in and do a deep cleaning. Once that was done and we knew there was no infection and we knew there was no problem, then I went into the admin panel, and you have to go through a very specific process to turn on the rights. Once this is suspended by Microsoft, you can turn it on as the admin, but you got to go through this little process, and that's the link that's going to be in the show notes, which is answering can't send emails from Office. And once I went through that process, it takes up to an hour for then the user being allowed to send. Now, we changed the email password right away. Anytime there's any question about any account being compromised, go change the password, especially with email. You suspect anything with a problem, go to the admin portal, change the email password. So that's the first thing we did, was change the email password, but that didn't help us. And then once I logged in, after my son was done cleaning, I logged in and I read the actual message that they were getting for the mail undelivered because they're not allowed to send. Then I just started Googling and then found this article that is specific to Microsoft and what you have to do to activate sending for the account. So I wanted to share that. So lots of interesting things happening. Now, from work standpoint on hardware, I don't know anybody watching the video, if you can see over my shoulder, we reset up this office a few weeks ago. And the desk now for my son is directly behind me. And you can actually see the chair and I think see part of his monitor. But along the back wall is a workbench with several computers right now. One of them is this monster Dell old Precision workstation that was redeployed. And we put Windows 10 in a solid state drive, but it is a beast. It weighs like 100 pounds, and it's got a great video card and a old Xeon processor and 32 gigs of RAM. It was a high-end Precision workstation. But now my client, and they got several new engineering workstations, they redeployed this for some tasks. But it keeps overheating. It's out in the shop, and they have it in an enclosure that they say they keep the door open, and it keeps overheating. Over the last 2 days, I've been running some really good stress tests on this system. It is not overheating. I believe it's just not being properly ventilated. We checked all the fans. We checked the airflow in the system. I'm throwing everything at it. It is not overheating. So now tomorrow I'm going to have a conversation with my client. They got to use a different cart for this, or some way to mount this on the outside of the cart. This system is too big to be enclosed. You can't enclose computers like that. So we got to get the airflow. I don't believe there's any fan or any venting in this cabinet. Even if they keep the front door open, that's not enough. So we got to make sure that the hot air can escape. And I think it's just hitting the back wall. Now, they have other carts with no problem, but the systems are smaller, generate less heat. And I found out something. This was the first cart that they got, and it didn't have any fan or any ventilation where the other carts do. And that's why we're not having other issues. So we're going to have a heart to heart with one of the engineers where we need a different cart and a way to have this out in the shop. And it's one running their manufacturing ERP system at a particular location in tooling. And we have several systems throughout the shop where people clock in and clock out. They fill out information for what they're producing and what they're working on. So we have a real-time manufacturing of what is happening at the different departments. So it's very, very cool. But we got to get this system, got to get this working. Laptops. We have had so many laptops come through where they're slow, not working right. We have one I'm working on right now. The client's picking up tomorrow. It's still Windows 7, so I'm going to let her know, hey, we got to get this upgraded to Windows 10 before January 14th. And what all we had to do is a good deep cleaning with our process. And we found the system was out of space because one of their kids was using it for recording. And I didn't know this, but my son picked up on this, recording Minecraft sessions. And that was taking up like 50 gig. And then Fortnite and Steam. I called my client. I said, your son using this? Oh, he used to use it. It's been a little bit. Well, the problem was I never knew that. I hadn't worked on this laptop in a long time. So they just killed the space. Once we got rid of all of the games, cleaned up the space, cleaned up the system, it's running good. But the battery was toast and they couldn't get any charge on it. So I ordered a new battery. It came in literally like an hour ago, popped it in. It's charging beautiful and it's working great. Client's going to pick it up tomorrow. We have two more laptops coming in Monday that we're going to be working on. And again, a lot of this just needs some good care and feeding and maintenance. And I'm just seeing a big uptick on laptops. And that's just something I just wanted to share. Lots of little hardware. Again, more hardware sales. And matter of fact, it got rescheduled. Next week, we had two systems and a couple monitors we were going to set up for a CPA, a small CPA firm that they have two Windows 7 systems and they know they got to upgrade. So we got them new computers, Windows 10, and then we're going to do a conversion of migrating them. And of course, this is where Fab's Auto Backup 7 Pro comes in. We will absolutely use that to migrate all of their data files and get them up and running smooth on Windows 10. Matter of fact, just did that on Wednesday. My son and I, my biggest client, we were on site and again, a new Windows 10 laptop, and we had to migrate from the old laptop, and Fab's to the rescue anytime we're doing that. And a link for you to purchase Fabs is going to be in the show notes, as it is every single week. Came across, and I want you to take a look at this. It is a new updated Power Toys by Microsoft. The first link is the new, I guess, preview release of Power Toys, where you can download it. And one of the first options is Fancy Zones. It's a Windows manager that it is designed to make it easy to arrange and snap windows into efficient layouts for your workflow, and also to restore these layouts quickly. I'm going to be testing this one. I already tested the next one I'm going to talk about. I have a client that will absolutely directly benefit from this. So I'm going to have a link to the Power Toys Fancy Zones. The next one, I love it. It's a Windows key shortcut guide at your fingertips. So now all of the Windows keys, and you can set new shortcuts. You hit the key to bring it up, and you're going to get a pop-up where you can see Windows A is to open the Action Center. Windows H opens the dictation bar. And all of those great Windows shortcuts available to you as an easy pop-up. This one I've already started using, and I put it on my system. So I really, really like that. So you're going to like this shortcut guide. So I wanted to share that on the new Power Toys. Now, that's sort of a preview to next week. Maximum PC, on their newest issue, put 50 of their top free apps that you should be using. Now, a lot of them we've already talked about, but I found about 10 that I've never worked on, and one I started using while I was traveling, and I'm going to share that. So look for next week, a deep dive into a lot of these utilities and apps that you may not be aware of, and I'll have links to everything. Time for email. First one from Josh, and this is about QuickBooks server migration. And Josh, sorry I didn't get back to you directly, so I'm answering it here live on the show. We recently acquired a new customer, and they need a new server as the one they have is 10 years old. They have QuickBooks 2018, and I'm curious if I can lift and shift the QuickBooks data folder over to the new share and point all the clients over from what I read on the QuickBooks community, or is it more complicated than that? It's, well, I would say half and half. You can't just copy everything. You need the QuickBooks 2018 installer, and on the new system, you need to go through the custom install, which is the option. You will not be using QuickBooks on this machine, but the data will be stored there. And that will install the QuickBooks Database Manager. Once you have that installed, you point that to the directory on the box that you're sharing out that's going to have the QuickBooks files. Now, make sure you only copy the QuickBooks files, not the, I think it's TDS. There's a bunch of other extensions. Don't copy them, just the QuickBooks, because I think the .nd refers to the directory location, and that's changing. So that network information is going to change. Those files will get generated when users access the file and when the QuickBooks Database Manager runs for the first time, against the directory where those files are located. Hope I didn't confuse you. So you're going to copy those files over to that share, to that directory, and then install QuickBooks where QuickBooks isn't going to be installed, but it will go through and install the Database Manager. And it won't ask you for any licensing info at that point, because it knows just to install the database manager, because remember, it's not going to be running a client, so it doesn't need an official license. So Joss, I've done that several times. This is from Jack, and this is a QuickBooks issue. I listen to your podcast on a regular basis and always find a lot of great information. I also enjoy your stories from the trenches. I currently have a problem with QuickBooks. My client has a Windows 7 Pro desktop with QuickBooks 2013. I cloned the existing hard drive to an SSD and upgraded to Windows 10. Then in place upgrade seems to be working fine. Boots quickly to the desktop. Some proprietary business software works flawlessly, but QuickBooks will not load. That's because QuickBooks needs 2015 or greater for Windows 10. Period. The end. Now, I wish you upgraded QuickBooks before you upgraded to Windows 10. And since you cloned it, you got a double problem. Because now you have to delete that file that I talked about, that entitlement file that I talked about earlier in the show. So you kind of have a double whammy. Get the data, copy it, get it off the computer. Just get rid of it. Get it off the computer. So now you got a copy of the data on an external drive. Uninstall QuickBooks. Before you uninstall, you still have to delete that file. So delete that entitlement file. Then uninstall QuickBooks. Get the latest version because you need 2015 or greater. You're not going to buy the old version. So go buy QuickBooks 2019. Install it. Now copy those files back to the directory on the system and do an update. Now you're going to have the admin password for each of those database files for QuickBooks, because you got to be the admin in order to do an upgrade. And then it will walk you through the upgrade process. And I've went from 2013 to 2019, so you shouldn't have any issues. Now with that, I'm going to continue because that's the answer. The problem seems to be with the .NET framework. No, it's not. Let's see. I am prompted to reinstall QuickBooks. That's not going to help you. I have run the tool from Intuit to try to fix the installation. Nope. I am contemplating uninstalling and doing a clean install of QuickBooks 2018. That's not going to work. You have to delete that entitlement file before you do anything else because you cloned the drive. Now, since you cloned it, I have a better idea. What I would do is put the other drive, the original drive, back and then do the QuickBooks update. Then clone it. Delete the entitlement file. Make sure QuickBooks runs. Do the up. Now, remember, you've already done the upgrades back on the older drive. Then do the Windows 10 upgrade and you're not going to have any problems. And since you've already done the Windows 10 upgrade successfully, we know that works. And we know that the digital license is saved at Microsoft. So you're not going to have a problem activating. That's my recommendation, Jack. And if you need assistance with that, email me and I will help you at a consulting level. I will call. I could remote in. I could help you. I've been through this. And you can email me, mike@mhsconsulting.net. I have really good rates for consultant to consultant. If anybody needs assistance like that, we can schedule time and I can help you. But that is the answer. Well, I'm pretty definite here on what's happened on these. This is Doug. Notes from show 707. In show 707, you had an email about situations where Francis and you need serial connections and you discussed USB to serial port adapters as the solution. Well, that was my listener's solution. I've had mixed results. I have always opted for PCI serial boards from StarTech, as that is more native than going through a USB port. I agree. These boards are about $33 from StarTech on Amazon, where the USB adapters are around 12. The extra cost is irrelevant in relation to the potential of configuration and troubleshooting. I also use StarTech adapters when I need parallel ports. Obviously, I would use the USB adapter with a laptop or a computer that did not have a PCI slot available. I am guessing in manufacturing, laptops are a common choice for interfacing with equipment. Yes, they are. Do you have some other reason to prefer a USB adapter? Doug, no. And if you listened, I'm in favor of trying what my listener suggested for that particular brand. But I've had very, very mixed results. Going from parallel to USB, forget it. I'll never do that. I've had like a 0% success rate. And I'm probably 50-50 on serial to USB. I actually agree with you, Doug. If I can do it, I will put a card in. Now, I got lucky with one client where it was a small footprint. It didn't have a serial port. And there was some hearing aid equipment that needed to connect to the serial port. And I got a serial to USB, and I was very lucky. But I believe that's more rare than it, you know, for it to work. Because I've been in situations where it hasn't, and we had to get a different computer. And one that could accommodate a serial card. I just didn't mention the serial card. It didn't hit off the top of my head when I was reading that. So, Doug, thank you. It's a good solution. This is from Derek. Again, USB to serial. Interesting here. In my shop, we use a bunch of legacy gear back to XP. The only adapter we use without fail is the StarTech IC USB 232-1F. It may be worth a look. We are ordering the A10 adapter you mentioned for testing. Most of our gear dates back to the early 90s, and the StarTech adapters have been instrumental for us to VT100 into our proprietary train gear for configuration and script editing. We use Panasonic Toughbooks for all of our maintenance tasks. I'm familiar with that. The A10 may use the same chipset. I will let you know if it works for us. Awesome. I also use the StarTech at home for hobby applications. And since then, my adapters are collecting dust in my junk drawer. Thanks for the service you provide. And I love the In the Trenches segment. That is unanimous. And one of the common thank yous from everybody at TechCon 2019 that I was able to enjoy and hang out with and talk to. It's the In the Trenches sections, and I will never let that go away because it's the real world. It's the battles you're fighting that I'm fighting alongside, and we need to share because we're running into the same issues. And it's great to say, hey, I heard that on the Mike Tech Show. Let me try that. Or go back to the website and search. This is from Rod, this will be regarding your last show, 707, RMM. I know that your model is or has been based on a retainer client model. And although you are not using a break-fix model, as I understand it, you invoice quarterly for a fixed number of hours and work through those billable hours during a quarter. So my question is that now that you have introduced RMM into the mix. The RMM should allow you to automate tasks, and you would normally have been charging against billable hours under your current model. The client is not paying any monthly fee for the cost of the RMM. So I'm curious how the RMM will affect your invoicing. It's a great question. Theoretically, you should be able to accomplish some of the tasks in less time. But obviously, you don't want to invoice for less, or introducing the RMM would defeat its purpose. I suppose you could break out some of your tasks, and if you know how long it took you to accomplish a task, set of tasks prior to the RMM, you could still invoice for what it took you to accomplish it pre-RMM. And you hit it on the head there. That's exactly what we're going to do. We will absorb the cost of the RMM, do it in less time, but bill for the typical time that it took. That's for existing retainers. This is something that I've struggled with since, generally speaking, I think an RMN would be used in an MSP model where clients are charged fixed amounts per endpoint. And I hope that makes sense. So I'm going to answer this. I'm doing exactly what you have suggested, Rod, which is we're going to do the tasks faster because we're automating it and making our life easier. And that's what I had to make sure my son understood. Learn how to automate. We're billing the same. It's going to take us less time to do it. And we're getting better reporting information, better information, being proactive more. That's what we're seeing. So it's helping us, but we're still going to maintain. Now, I intend to invoice in a hybrid approach going forward. New client, I will charge them a monthly fee per device that we're going to bill quarterly, but I'm also going to add the hours for support. So it's going to be a fixed price for those items for the help recoup the RMM cost, but I'm still going to have the retainer hours for helping them if they call, remoting in and fixing a problem, being on site. So I'm going to combine it where it should help us be able to react faster and have more billable options by being able to charge per endpoint. But it is not all you can eat, and it's going to be just for monitoring. If we got to fix something or go and work on something that's more than, 10 minutes, then that is billable. And that will come off the chunk of hours. He continues, chocolatey, I am using SolarWinds instead of Synchro, but I have been struggling to find the right way to deploy software packages as well. I had heard of chocolatey before your show, but had never taken the time to play with it until this past week. I have mixed emotions. I found it much easier that I thought it would be, and was really excited about what I could do with it. But after I started researching it, I'm not so sure it will work for me, since by default, the chocolatey packages are from a community maintained repository. I think this presents a security issue. Even in their own documentation, chocolatey does not recommend using the community repository. So I'm wondering if you have looked into what it would take to build and use your own repository of limited packages. What little I have looked into this, it appears it leads down the path of a paid subscription, but I may be wrong. No, you are exactly right if you want the security and not the community repository. I accidentally ran across one example. As I was testing implementing a few packages, one of the packages I installed on a test machine was ImageBurn, IMG Burn. Then later, I used it to install Malwarebytes. After Malwarebytes installed, it ran a scan and Malwarebytes flagged the ImageBurn installation as having malware. I further tested this on two other machines. On one machine, I noticed I used Nynite to install ImageBurn, and the other machine, I used Chocolatey to install ImageBurn. Then I installed Malwarebytes on both systems. On the system with the Nynite installed ImageBurn, Malwarebytes came up with a clean scan. On the system that Chocolatey installed, Malwarebytes once again flagged ImageBurn as having malware. One other Chocolatey question. After installing Chocolatey, I am sure you have encountered the situation where you are prompted, yes, for a dash Y to finish a package installation. Unless you use PowerShell to install the command Choco feature, which is what I've done on test systems, and enabled the dash N allow global confirmation. In the interest of automating everything, I tried pushing out that command as a PowerShell command, but it did not work for me. Oh, it did work for me as I did that. I found that I had to go to each machine and manually type in that command in order to successfully push out an installation script. What did you end up doing for this? As always, I enjoy and look forward to your show. It was great to see you at TechCon last month. Rod?
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, we actually talked at TechCon.
Here's what I've done in a test environment. I've put that Choco script and I've pushed it. I have been very lucky. There are lots of great community scripts in the Synchro script community. And I've used some of them to deploy Chocolaty. But now you give me great concern about some of those apps in the free section. So I'm going back in my head. Do I create my own repository like you? It's not like I'm going to have a zillion programs. I'm going to have, what, maybe 6 to 10 that I'm going to regularly deploy. And if we maintain an update in a private area on my website that we call from a PowerShell script, that's what I want to do. From a security standpoint, you nailed it right on the head. And this is a great example of you got to test. You got to test. I think I mentioned last week, and I mentioned it to some people this week, on my test system behind me, I destroyed it by playing with a PowerShell script, and I deleted all the subdirectories of every directory off the C drive. Yeah. Yeah, it was ugly. But I was happy because I learned a great deal in deploying that script. You have to test and test again and test again. And I now have 2 test systems, and I have images of both of them that I can quickly deploy after I blow it up. So I am going to work on my own repository. So unless you have a guaranteed secured repository, and I believe the paid version may lend itself to that, and I'm wondering, is it worth paying and then testing with ImageBurn? And can you pay month to month where maybe we try the paid version of Chocolaty for a month, see the file difference that we're getting of that ImageBurn and other programs like that? So interesting. We have to test and we have to play. I would never, based on what you just said and just common sense, we can't just trust downloading a file like that and putting it on client systems without first doing it to one of our test systems. So keep that in mind in anything we talk about or recommend here. Thank you so much, Rod. This is from Anthony. I'm a longtime listener now and just wanted to say first, thank you for what you do. I know you're a Synology user and I just bought a few for my clients as well. As I am playing with them, I noticed a feature that I think Synology used to charge for, but is now free. No licenses at all. Active backup for business. I am backing up important computers, servers, and VMs on my network. It works awesome. I haven't used that. I've been still using the hybrid backup. And then I use Amazon Glacier and some other products that are built in that's a paid for Amazon Web Services in order to back up Synologies. Active backup for Office 365. I have my clients on Office 365 directly through Office 365 and have this running. It is very nice knowing their data is being backed up now. Everywhere I have looked into this, it's very costly and places charges per user to back up Office 365. Synology is free. Active backup for G Suite. I don't have anyone on this, but it's just like the Office 365 backup. Anyway, I just wanted to let you know, just in case you weren't aware,
they now made this free and pass it on to your listeners. It's a very good free solution. The Office 365 backup pays for the Synology box 1,000 times over. Thanks again, Anthony. You gave me my test tasks for the weekend. That's exactly what I'm going to be doing now with my Synology. And I have a couple Synologies that are going to be deployed for two new opportunities that I landed for two clients. I will absolutely look into that and report back. Something else I don't do, but I'm going to be deploying for a client, and I will go over it in detail, which is using the VPN server solution of the Synology to have secured encrypted tunnels from outside the office so we can map drives directly to the Synology across the VPN. And I have a client that requires that, and I've already been testing it this week, and knock wood, it's been working. So I will document all of that, and that will become part of a show coming up. Dexter, to wrap this up, and it's on backup alerts. Your thoughts on this? I have a lot of backup alerts for many products. Acronis, Shadow Protect, SPX, Veritas Systems Recovery, an oldie but a goodie backup exec. You mentioned you had problems as a customer getting email alerts using Gmail. I am using an ISP POP account for send alerts. What did you come up with to use? Great show. I am using, it's $9.95 a month, and that's a lot, I think. There is a, you can send from any device with no questions, but it's a SureWeb purchase and accounts that they have literally for what we're talking about with alerts, having a copier, having a machine, send information and send it out and have a real SMTP server in the cloud that you can hit and authenticate to, and they allow it and they don't lock it down and have problems like Gmail, but you got to pay for that. And at least I found my email provider allows that, and SureWeb actually sells that. And you know what? Because of this, and I mentioned SureWeb, I'm going to put in my link. If you use or buy SureWeb, use my link in the show notes, and I'll put it in there because I'll get credit for that as an advisor, and that would help, and it helps support the show, and I really appreciate that. And another great way is to use our Amazon link. Carrie Holzman and I share an Amazon link that's in the show notes of every show for Tech Vets and the Mike Tech Show, and Carrie and I split that. You come to MikeNation.net, click on that link that says for Amazon, then add the item. It takes you right to Amazon, but now we're getting credit for everything you buy, and you can put that into your cart. Your price stays the same, but a small piece comes back to support Mike Smith and Carrie Holzman, and we really appreciate your continued support. It makes a big difference in helping us out. Remember, Instant House Call, go to instanthousecall.com, download the 15-day trial, use the promo code MikeTechShow, and Fab's Auto Backup 7 Pro, can't live without it, especially now when we got this big uptick where everybody rushing to Windows 10 before the end of life of Windows 7. This is the answer for you, helping you out for transferring the files. That's it. Hope everybody had a great week, and I will see you back here next week, same time, same channel. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.